probably the phrase that comes to my mind that I don't know if this is good or bad is don't mess this up. Because, and not that I'm the only one that could mess it up, but certainly, as we all know, I mean, the higher up you are in the leadership, you know, kind of chain, the easier it is for you to mess it up. It would not take much for me to make a dumb decision personally or a dumb decision from an organizational standpoint, and all of a sudden, a lot of that, maybe it's not lost forever, but it could go sideways pretty fast. And so I don't know, I feel that.
My name is Matt Bros with Lockton, and I have been so fortunate in my life to be surrounded by some really awesome people. So I want to be able to get their stories out there so that we can all learn from them together. Welcome to the Excellence Culture.
Well, welcome to the Excellence Culture. I am excited to be sitting here with somebody I've been looking up to for a long time, just due to, you know, just what you do, honestly, for your career and what you've created with, obviously, a lot of other people, too. But Brian Mosley with Right Now Media is here joining us for the Excellence Culture. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
It's my privilege. I'm really looking forward to today. And, yeah, just enjoy getting to know you and, yeah, excited to talk.
Yeah, it's been fun. We've already had lunch today, which is great.
We went to
Merido Golf Club and had a little bit of a lunch. And we just, it's quiet there, right?
Yeah.
So we can talk and get to know each other and... But I would love for you to just kind of first just introduce yourself, the role that you have, and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. So president of Right Now Media, it's a nonprofit, kind of a Christian-based ministry based here in the Dallas area. Have about 180 people on our team. We love serving churches and schools and businesses. We create video-driven content that they can use for education and training's sake. And we have, you know, people we serve here throughout the United States for sure, but then also around the world, which has been a lot of fun the last couple of years, especially to grow beyond just our borders.
I love it. And so how long has Right Now Media been Right Now? Yeah, I guess it started something else. So maybe you can tell me a little bit.
Sure.
And
the quick story. I mean, about 45 years old, my granddad and dad started it. It's gone through a couple different phases in terms of just kind of adjusting to, you know, current times, current technology. So it was documentaries for a while, and then it was VHS for a while, and then it was DVD for a while, and then probably about the last 14 years is in this kind of current chapter where we've been streaming content to the people we're serving, you know, in an online digital library. Like you would see at Netflix or Hulu or whatever, but it's you know, a very
narrow lane.
Netflix. Yeah, it's more of a training, teaching type content.
Yeah, love it. Okay, so we're going to get back to that a little bit, to that storyline, but I always like to kind of start out these conversations by, let's talk about you, childhood, little Brian, I say, so, you know, what was your upbringing like?
So, I mean, very, very thankful, ultimately, for my upbringing. Had, and still have, you know, very loving parents, have a younger brother who's about 5 years younger than me. We grew up here in the Dallas area. I'm firstborn, so I'm pretty classic, like, a rule follower, you know, kind of just wanting to, I mean, there's good and bad with this, right? It's like probably wanting to become a people pleaser, so it's like I'm going to perform in academics or whatever thing is I'm doing. You know, decent academics, okay at sports. I mean, I think back then you didn't have to be super good at sports to enjoy them, and so you could just kind of enjoy a lot of sports, and I enjoyed different sports. And I think I was just a pretty kind of straight and narrow kid for, you know, my upbringing years. We were plugged into church, got involved in church, and that was kind of my community.
Okay, so, you know, being the Excellence Culture, we kind of dig in a little bit more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about that upbringing, you said you're just somebody who just, it seemed like you're somebody that wanted to do the right thing. And obviously that comes from somewhere. Can you remember maybe, you know, as a child, the dynamics in your home, whether it was maybe a strict, you know, parenting standpoint or just nurturing, what do you think kind of led to you just being that type of person that just wanted to do the right thing and and do things well?
You know, I mean, kind of playing on this word excellence. I mean, I don't know as if I would say, oh, my parents were all about the word excellence, but I think they just modeled it. I mean, I think they just, you know, in terms of the way they, I mean, their relationship, the way they did, you know, their careers, the way that they were involved in church. And I mean, I just feel like they were striving for excellence. And again, I don't know if as a kid I would have pegged that word and been like, oh, you're trying to be excellent. But I saw it for sure. And so, yeah, I think I grew up just thinking, okay, again, I know there's shadow side, dark side, everything. I don't think I was just like, hey, if you don't perform, then we don't love you. I don't think it was like that.
Yeah.
I think there was just an expectation like, hey, you're going to do your best. You're going to work hard at what you do. And sometimes it works well, and then sometimes, you know, you kind of stumble, but it's just a matter of, you know, putting in the effort and working hard and using the gifts and strengths you've got. So, again, I don't know if the word excellence was the key word in that time period for me, but I think looking back on it, I can certainly say, yeah, they just modeled it in a big way.
Well, in this whole thing that I've done too, I don't really want that word excellence to be like an intimidating word, right? Yeah. It's just, what I like to say is it's just be the type of person that wakes up in the morning, you want to be your best.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think sometimes that word excellence can feel kind of flashy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
And that seems like that's what your upbringing was like.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I think, I appreciate what you're saying about the word excellence. I remember reading the Steve Jobs biography a number of years ago, and I've read some other biographies, and you just think, oh man, look at the greatness like that they were or they have achieved, or you know, what people would call them the greatest of something. And while as admirable as that is, you read all those biographies and you think, yeah, but they sacrificed an extreme amount of things to get to that greatness.
Yeah.
And so I like your word excellence better than greatness for sure, because I think there's an element of you can be excellent and not have had to sacrifice to get there. And whereas I think if you want to be the greatest basketball player, business person, singer, whatever, that you're going to have to sacrifice a lot, and not all that's good.
And it can backfire.
It can backfire.
Yeah. So I appreciate you saying it that way.
Yeah.
And so there was a period of time where did you go to college?
Baylor.
Okay.
Yeah.
You went to college at Baylor. Which
you've got a Baylor right joke on, brewing right now. I can tell. I don't know what it is, but you've got a Baylor joke brewing.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. Maybe just after. But we're in the middle of March Madness right now. Both of our teams are out.
Yeah.
So there's really not a whole lot to say there.
Yeah, we can't pick on each other too much.
But yeah. And so when did your dad start, I guess, Bluefish Media at the time?
Yeah.
When did that start? What age were you? And
So interestingly, so I'm 45. I mean, they really started that by the time I was born. Mm. And so the organization is as old as I am. And Priority One was the name when they first started. And they did about 10 years of producing documentaries of missionaries around the world. And then in the late 1980s, it transitioned. And then it was called Bluefish. And that was this VHS and DVD curriculum VHS at first and eventually DVD curriculum that was used, again, primarily by churches. So I grew up around all that. And loved hearing the stories, loved kind of being a part of it, but never like thought, oh, that's what I'm going to go do, or I'm supposed to go do it, or I'm destined to go do it. Like, that was never expectation. But I look back and I'm thankful for some of the experiences and exposure I had as a kid just to that world, because I think like a lot of us, when you grow up around certain things, you're kind of just drawn to it, and that's certainly the case for me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you get out of college. Tell me about your kind of aspirations when career started to even just get on your mind.
Yeah.
You know, where were you when you were in college? What was your education around?
Yeah. So I went to Baylor. It was the worst name ever. They've changed the major since then. It was called telecommunications at that time.
Okay,
now it's like radio. It was really the radio, television, film degree that they decided to call telecommunications. And now they call, I think, digital film and media or something. It's much cooler now than it was. And so I went into college thinking I'm interested in media, but that wasn't like, again, my whole life's ambition. My other grandfather, not my dad's dad, but my mom's dad, was an engineer. I was decent enough at math growing up where I thought, I may be an engineer. I had no idea what an engineer did, but I just thought they use math and that's probably what I'll do. And then right before going to college, I had to do a project in an English class, and it was a video project. And that was honestly the first time it really ever occurred to me, like, oh, I kind of like doing this, and this was really fun to experiment with and put my hands on the production process. I thought, I may enjoy studying that and doing something like that more long term. So that put me on the trajectory, but that was not in my plans, growing up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so out of college, did you pursue anything else or did you go right into?
Yeah, well, and so college, I was studying this media degree thing. And a couple ingredients are blending together for me. Grew up certainly around some of this missionary documentary stuff. My parents would meet folks, on their travels and then they'd come back and these missionaries would sometimes come and stay in our home. And so that was interesting. Studying media. So I went overseas for the first time in college. I turned 20 in Africa. And so it was like such a pivotal, like life-changing moment for me. And spent about 4 weeks there helping to tell the story of some folks that were living in a very remote part of Tanzania. And I remember flying back across the Atlantic going, that was awesome. I would love to do more of that. What would life look like if I could be telling stories of folks, you know, that are doing this kind of thing around the world? And so that's really kind of what my, you know, aspirations or ambitions were at that point, was to, I didn't know if that meant living somewhere overseas or just traveling quite a bit. Got back to college, started contacting a bunch of agencies and saying, hey, here's the experience I have, the degree I'm about to get, I'm going to graduate shortly. Do you have a place, you know, for somebody like me to work in your organization? And my two roommates were business majors, and they were accounting majors, and so they were getting wined and dined by these big accounting firms to come and be an intern. And I just remember watching them get wined and dined and me think, okay, I'm struggling to figure out what would be a good fit. And so that just, for me, that really opened my eyes to, I wonder if there's a lot of other people like me, they're kind of, you know, in this 20-something generation trying to figure out what are they going to do with significance, but they don't know where to go and they don't know who to turn to. And so underneath this Bluefish TV umbrella that my dad was leading at the time, thankfully, he and the board, as I started sharing with them some of my kind of dreams, I said, hey, why don't you incubate that idea here kind of under this umbrella? And so I did that almost 25 years ago. And we began connecting people to some different ministry opportunities, and then the media and the mission stuff just bled more and more together over the years.
And this is, the format of this content is DVD mainly.
At that time it was VHS, but yeah.
Really?
I mean, because 2000, you're still in the VHS world. I think it was probably 05, 06, 07.
It's not even flat screen TVs yet.
Oh, no. It's roll a card in with a big TV on the top of it, all that.
Yes. Yeah. And so what did the distribution of that look like? I mean, did you guys... Were you sending out tapes and everything from your location, or?
Yep. It was, for us, it was a direct to the market. So we had a team that would call and talk to, you know, churches or schools or businesses and say, hey, we've got some resources that may be a good fit for you. And we would send those VHS or DVD tapes to them. And they would actually preview them unpaid. So they would look at them and go, yeah, we are going to use this. And then they'd pay us. Or they'd look at them and go, actually, we don't think we can use this. And hopefully they'd send it back to you. And you could then take that, rebox it up, and send it to somebody else.
So, honor system.
Yeah. So we kind of had this cycle, you know, of people that would get them, pay for it, or get them, not pay for it, send it back. And all shipped directly from our warehouse.
Okay. And it's a nonprofit, correct? And you're still a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that. But. Yeah. It seemed necessary for it to be a nonprofit because you probably had people supporting that effort.
Yeah, the early years it was all donor driven, and then it migrated to being more self-sustaining, where you didn't have to have the donors, but still were kind of committed to the same mission and purpose.
Okay, and then at that time, how many employees would you say?
Like when I started, maybe is that when I started in my career in 2000, I bet there was 50 to 60-ish, probably, if I'm remembering correctly, on the team. And that would, And we probably hovered around there, you know, in that 50 to 70 range for many, many years. Up until we moved into the streaming world. And that really kind of changed.
Changed the game.
Changed the game for us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to quite go to the streaming world yet, but your role at this point is mainly production,
it
correct?
Is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And so... Now, but you're also the son of the leader. Mm-hmm. So were you starting to get kind of leadership responsibility at that time?
Yeah. So the way it happened for me, and I'm real thankful as I look back on it, I mean, you don't realize kind of what's happening in the moment.
Yeah.
When I look back on it, we were small enough as an organization where there wasn't this like formal, you know, mentoring system or whatever. I mean, we were just kind of a small mom and pop shop, you know, just trying to kind of do things. And so of the 50 to 60 to 70 people, I mean, two-thirds of them were kind of in that sales side. So, I mean, you had a small production team and a small kind of administrative team, and that was where I spent most of my time, was on that side of the equation. So, yeah, the answer to your question, I just am thankful. I think I resisted it for many years, but I was just thankful that, I had a seat at the table where my dad would say, okay, you know, and there was not a lot of leaders. I mean, it may have been like two of them, and there's like, hey, we're going to invite you up, and you don't necessarily have to say a whole lot, but you can just kind of see how we're processing the decisions we got to make. And so that was my kind of my master's degree. I didn't have any other, you know, higher education beyond just a bachelor's in college. That was kind of the real world training for me.
Did you find that you were attracted to that? Did you like the leadership aspect?
I did, and I mean, thinking back. Earlier than that, whether it was in kind of later high school or in college, I mean, I had some other opportunities to be involved in leadership things, and so I think I was getting more hungry for that.
Yeah. Okay. So we fast track a little bit more. You know, when did the streaming, what was the year that the streaming started?
Yeah, we started in 2010, kind of starting that process. Mm-hmm. By 2011, we had taken a big step into it. By 2012, everything we did was streaming.
Yeah, and I think I was introduced to you guys probably very early in that process, too.
Yeah.
And I know that there was a period of time where it seemed like a lot of the content, I think we may have watched our first VeggieTales on your platform.
Yeah.
So a lot of the content is content that you guys have put on your mm-hmm. platform, mm-hmm. but there's also a lot of content that you guys are creating.
Yeah.
And I think what a lot of people get very impressed by, and a good friend of mine, Will Irwin, would love that I'm saying this, is honestly the excellence of the content that you're creating. It would be very easy just to have a talking person just talking into a camera, you know, talking about the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys really put a lot of creativity to it and kind of make an experience.
We try. I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, Will's part of our team that creates those resources for us, and we've got a really talented group of folks that do that. And we've always felt like the message of what we're trying to put out there is super important, and so the quality and the excellence by which we transmit that message, we want it to be as high quality and high excellence as we can.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of creativity that our team puts into how do you get that important message to that audience in the most creative way possible.
Yeah. And has that always been the case, or was there an evolution to that of saying we got to keep continuing to get better?
I think there's always a desire to keep getting better.
Yeah.
And this is not like firsthand knowledge, but when I think back to even those, you know, late 70s, early 80s, them lugging gear around the world, shooting these documentaries, like nobody else was doing that, you know. And so it was kind of like, hey, we're trying to bring these images, bring these messages back home in a creative way then mm-hmm. with the technology available to us. And so as time marches on and technology changes and styles change, as best we can, our teams try to keep up with, okay, how do you make sure that the style today and the format today matches what the audience is expecting to see?
Yeah. So you've got some of this content that's out there that's, you know, produced by other people, organizations. Mm-hmm. Let's use VeggieTales as an example. What was the process like for you guys to get that kind of content on your platform? And, you know, was it different for each one?
Yeah. Well, and so what happened was, you know, you go from producing your own, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 major DVD projects a year and distribute them to now you've got this streaming pipeline. So you got this huge, you know, it's kind of, you got to keep feeding that beast because now you've got, I mean, for somebody to say, yeah, you've got a worthwhile library for me to subscribe to, you've got to have enough content, a deep enough content well that people go, yeah, there's enough here for me. And so that opened our eyes to saying, hey, we want to continue to create content. And we create a lot more content today than we've ever created because that pipeline is so big. But even as much as we're creating, we had to have other people's content. And so we just began approaching different people who had created great content and said, hey, we've got this library. We'd love to help distribute your resources to the audience we're serving. We're not trying to be your only distribution strategy, but if we can be part of it, we'd love to do that. And so, yeah, it's really a one at a time. You just start talking to different creators and saying, can we partner up with you and help you distribute, you know, this title or your small library of titles to the audience we're serving? And so it's fun because now when you look at the library, our desire is to have enough in there to where, again, think in particular like a church or a business, enough variety to where kind of any type of person or any age of person would look at it and say, oh, yeah, there's something there for me.
Yeah. You know, I kind of want to tell the audience a little bit of what the experience is like in being a user mm-hmm. because some people, we might be sitting here talking, it might still be going over their head a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, like, for an example, you know, I was going to a church that basically subscribed to Right Now Media, which allowed access for all their members to be able to have access to this platform.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think at the time, I'm not sure that there were TV apps yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think at the time you would kind of plug it in on your phone.
Yeah.
And you would get an ID and password from your church. And then you go in there and you have access to this platform that was all just, you know, solid, safe content for you to show your family.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you've got a home group from your church that you're walking through some content with. But just this resource library that was all faith-based.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested in asking, like, Because obviously, even within the word Christian, there's a lot of different beliefs in that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, like, is that a burden that you guys kind of have to bear a little bit? And do you have a statement of faith yourself, mm-hmm. like, as an organization, and things need to be in line with that?
Yeah. Yeah, you probably pinpointed, I mean, one of the harder things, honestly. I mean, because it is challenging. Yeah. You know, on one hand, it brings to mind kind of this tension that we always feel, which is, we have a mission that we're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. and so we're trying to stay true to that. We also have, you know, a business to run, and so it's like, well, you can attract more customers if you keep widening, you know, who you're trying to serve, but then that may not align with the mission you're trying to serve. So it's just this balancing act, and I wish I could say there's like this easy formula, you know, yeah. to figure all that out, but it's kind of art and science. I mean, we do have a statement of faith. There are certain things that we're like, hey, this is what we're very, very clear on, and there's other things it's harder to be clear on, and so yeah. you just have to kind of look at each teacher and or piece of content and say, okay, do we believe this is going to be the best for the church we're serving or not?
Yeah.
And we've made decisions over the years that we know make some people go, yeah, that's, if you don't have that, then I'm not interested. Or if you do have that in your library, then I'm not interested. I mean, it's just, I know it happens.
It's hard to keep everybody happy.
Nobody's going to be happy. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think y'all have done a great job at that. And so let's kind of get back a little bit to the personal side of things. Mm-hmm. So, in Baylor, or at Baylor, when did you meet your wife?
So we met right actually before Baylor. So okay. We're high school sweethearts, started dating right at the end of high school, and then we both went to Baylor and dated all through Baylor.
Yeah. Got married pretty quick after you graduated, I guess, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah, she was a year ahead of me. She graduated in May of 99. I somehow miraculously was able to graduate a semester early. And so I graduated December of 99, and January 1st, 2000 was the first Saturday available for us to get married. And so we got married on Y2K.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, was she on this journey with you, with your dad's business at the time, I would say, or your dad's nonprofit?
Yeah. I mean, I would say with me in the sense of, I mean, she knew, especially, you know, I mean, come back from Africa and some of the things I was starting to think about and dream about, yeah. what my career may look. I mean, she was totally right there in the midst of all that. And
yeah.
then, you know, she's been right there with me the whole time. So it's not from a working there standpoint,
yeah.
but from definitely a encourager, supporter, connected, you know, kind of confidant all the way through.
Okay. And I know you've got a 20-year-old,
mm-hmm.
so probably within about 5 years or so, it seems like, or pretty quick,
mm-hmm.
you guys decide to start growing your
yeah.
family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this aspect of, you know, being a father and a husband and being an entrepreneur, being a leader, and just the balance that all of that takes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, it's pretty interesting. I think just earlier we were talking about, you know, some of the sacrifices that, you know, excellence takes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those sacrifices that these people are considered great, like you were talking about earlier,
yeah.
that sacrifice has hit their family.
Absolutely.
The most, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I don't know if you've done it awesome or whatever, but I would say that's a huge aspect to this,
yeah.
this thought about excellence, right?
Yeah.
It's not just this product that you're seeing that I've delivered, but it's the fact that I've still got a family together.
Yeah.
you
yeah.
know, and I know that was hard. So tell me about some of the challenges and that, because I'm sure you've traveled a lot, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, again, keying on that word excellent, I think there's a question of, you know, if people are thinking about that word, it's like, well, am I striving to be excellent in this lane of my life or in all of my life? You know, and if
yeah.
you just narrow it to one lane, then you can easily start to jeopardize and sacrifice other lanes. And yeah, there's no way I've done it perfect, but I mean, that family, again, I saw it modeled growing up, and so I'm thankful for that. And my wife also saw that modeled for her growing up, and so we've commented many times over the years just how thankful we are for mm-hmm. the upbringing we had and the homes that we came from. So that idea of family and balance and not just kind of forsaking one for this or this for that, I mean, that's always been a part of, you know, my perspective and thought process and hers as well, and so again, certainly not perfect, but I would say from the very beginning, there's always been this thought of, okay, the work over here is important. And sometimes when you do work that is, you know, very cause-driven, you can almost trick yourself into thinking, well, this is the most important thing. And it's like, well, it is important, but it doesn't mean that you're supposed to do that at the expense of other, you know, your own kind of mental, emotional, physical health, as well as your family and stuff. So, we work really hard to just make sure that there's family time all the time. And when there's times that that needs to bleed into work time because of some, you know, emergency or crisis situation, you just got to make the time.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but when we had our first Zoom call, when me and you kind of met, I shared with you, I think it was probably like 10 years ago. This is already when I'm a consumer of Right Now Media, and I've seen you on a few things, and I saw you at Six Flags, and I was standing right behind you in a line at Six Flags. So that's actually the first time we met.
Awesome. I remember that. No, I'm sorry. I wish I didn't.
No. You know, I was drawn to, you know, you with your family out there. And
was I treating them good at that time?
Yeah, it seemed good.
Okay,
it seemed good. There, somebody was on a leash. That was weird.
Whatever.
No, I'm just kidding. But no, it was really good. And but I'd be interested because I think about, like, you might think about what was that, what season of life or what season of Right Now was going on. But really, when it comes down to it, I'd like to know what's been kind of the hardest season for Right Now Media, you know, in the history that you've been involved with it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, big picture, I'm thankful that there's not been just like major wheels falling off moments. But especially, I think, you know, what you like to focus on, which is so key, thinking about culture and thinking about, you know, the, the health and the strength of a culture. I would say over the last, you know, 8 to 10 years, that's and about 8 to 10 years ago, there's just kind of some realization of, okay, I need to focus more on thinking about the culture. And I think just as a younger and kind of less mature or less experienced leader, I don't know if I felt like, I probably felt like there's other things that I needed to focus on and the culture wasn't as important. And there were just handful of different things that happened to realize, oh, okay, we're kind of losing some people here. We're kind of, you know, stubbing our toe here on some things that we don't have to. They're easy, but we're just, my eye is probably off the ball there. And so that was a wake-up call for me, and I'm not going to say that I've been perfect ever since that, but I've personally, I mean, in the role that I'm in, felt like I need to spend a lot more time thinking about the culture overall, you know, from front door to back door here on our team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, culture is such a hard thing to figure out, right? And sometimes the more people try to have a good culture, the worse it gets, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to ask you, you know, and this is going to be a little bit open-ended, but kind of the anatomy of a good culture, right? And so, because you are, Right Now Media is very well known for the culture. And kudos, right? And I know it's probably not only been you, but a lot of awesome people that are in place to make that happen. And so what would you say is some of the key traits that allows you guys to have such a solid culture?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that it's not just me, and it's not even just kind of the executive team. But I will say we've worked really hard, and I've worked hard as well, to just at that top leadership, upper leadership level, to just try to be as kind of open, authentic, kind of real as we can with the people around us. And doesn't mean we're sharing absolutely every detail of everything, but I do think it's not only, that culture doesn't only, it's not only based on the top, but I think it does start there. Because without that, there's just no way it ripples into the rest of the team. And so so we work really hard to do that. I mean, sometimes culture, you know, people think of it as like, oh, what are the fun things you do or the benefits you do for your team? And we've gotten a lot better at even that over the years. And part of that came from doing some culture surveys, you know, and just those kind of classic, hey, we're going to ask everybody, you know, a series of questions. It's anonymous. You know, we're going to get the feedback, and that's going to give us some insights into what people are really thrilled about, but also where there's some shortcomings. And so there's, I mean, there was things about some of the benefit stuff that we had years ago that was like, hey, clearly after this, people want some better benefits, so we need to look into that. And there's some things about the way teams were interacting, like with each other, like kind of across team stuff. It's like, okay, doesn't take a rocket scientist. That shows up a couple years in a row of some challenging points on these surveys. Like, okay, we need to do something about that. And it's usually what we found is it's not like super hard stuff to have to do, but the surveys brought to the surface like, oh, of course, we can do that. We were kind of busy doing other stuff and didn't think about it. So anyway, I think it starts at the top, with the top being willing to really think about the culture. And then we've just tried to listen to our team in person, but also through some of those surveys.
Yeah, I think, you know, and those surveys are like very, very valuable, right? And but what we've also found is just this word around just belonging that people want to have, right? And when they don't belong, they're going to look for somewhere that they do belong.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and I think that word belonging, as it relates to culture, is, do I believe in what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Am I excited about what's going on here? Like, and it's not always just benefits. It's not like, but some people it is. And so have you had any kind of activities, sit around a table with executives, the team, and have those kind of discussions, mm-hmm. you know, more high level, like, you know, what does it mean for our people to really truly believe that they belong here?
Yeah.
Kind of conversation.
Yeah, and I think what it's looked like for us is on a relatively frequent basis, you know, really asking ourselves, like, is the mission we're on clear to us, and is it clear to the, you know, the whole team? Do people understand that their role, whether it's, you know, in software development or in sales or in operations, or like, do they understand how their part contributes to that mission, and they're not just kind of a cog in the wheel or just kind of a job? I mean, and again, it kind of goes back to that tension between kind of the mission and ministry aspect of it and the business aspect of it. I mean, I say business because even though we're still nonprofit, we don't take donations, and so we're always thinking, well, how
Blue Cross Blue Shield is a business or is a nonprofit?
Right. Yeah. So we're just always thinking, okay, with whatever resources we have, how do we make sure we're using those well, and not because there's not a donor at the end of the year that's going to come along and foot the bill. So there's that tension with everybody on our team, like, hey, yeah, we need the best software people out there who also believe in this mission and are willing to work hard for it. Well, you know, you can find the best ones. They can say they believe in the mission, but if you haven't made it clear how they fit into that, then over time it's like, well, this is just a job.
And
I can do this skill anywhere. Do I really want to do this job for this sake? And so we just have to constantly be in reminder mode and re-clarifying mode of, hey, this is what we're about, this is what we're trying to do, and how you play a part of it, and celebrating the wins. And I'm not personally, honestly, always as good at celebrating, whether it's even in my own family or at work, like just, oh yeah, let's remember what just happened and celebrate that, because I'm usually thinking, well, what's next? But there's people on our team who have helped us go, let's stop and celebrate this, and I totally believe that's worthwhile, and I'm thankful for their input.
Do you remember who what the first church was that signed on, or you don't.
I don't
so you
remember.
Don't celebrate your wins.
No,
that well.
I wish
that's
I could,
awesome.
I should know that, but I don't know that.
Hey, you're not perfect.
Yeah, I'm
you're not perfect.
Yeah.
Well, there is somebody who, you know, it was the very first guest I ever had on the Excellence Culture. And he is a leadership and culture expert. And we both know him. His name's Clay Scroggins.
Okay.
I thought it would be kind of fun to try calling him to see if he's got anything to say.
Sure. Like, yeah, he's going to have better things to say than I do. So that's good.
Think he, you know, I tried to prepare for him for this, but with Clay, like, he's doing so many things, so who knows. But let's see if he answers.
Bryce.
Oh.
He's there.
What's up, bud? How are you, man?
What's up, brother? Good, how are you?
I got Brian Mosley here.
Hi, Clay.
We're Right Now Media fan?
Yes, of Right Now Media. Right Now Media, yeah.
Brian, hello.
Clay says hello. We are recording. We're in the midst of recording right now. Yeah.
Oh, let's go. All right.
So I've got Brian here. And we were just in the middle of really kind of the main culture conversation around Right Now. And as you know, you've interacted with Right Now Media a lot, and you know that they've got a great culture. So we worked on celebrating that, right? But you got anything that you want to encourage with him with, or any question you want to ask him at all?
I mean, the amount of influence, Brian, I assume, I mean, I don't know. I'm curious how often it hits you, just the amount of people. I mean, just take this week, over the next 7 days, how many people are going to watch a piece of Right Now Media and experience some kind of life change or do something different? Do you ever have moments where you're able to take it in and go, this is unbelievable what we're getting to be about?
I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because I mean, you find those moments where you go, oh, this is awesome, and I wouldn't trade jobs with anybody. I love what I get to do, so I mean, there's no complaints on my end. But what you just said, Clay, is also like, man, okay, probably the phrase that comes to my mind, that I don't know if this is good or bad, is don't mess this up. Because and not that not that I'm the only one that could mess it up, but certainly, as we all know, I mean, the higher up you are in the leadership, you know, kind of chain, the easier it is for you to mess it up. It would not take much for me to make a dumb decision personally or a dumb decision from an organizational standpoint, and all of a sudden, a lot of that maybe is not lost forever, but it could go sideways pretty fast. And so I don't know, I feel that.
Yeah. How ridiculous is that answer? Because that's probably the mark of great leaders, is that they don't sit around taking stock or, you know, counting all their successes of all their opportunities to impact other people, but instead they see it as a stewardship that I've got to really manage this well. I don't know if that's a part of the excellence culture, but it should be.
It should be, yeah. I think you just made it a part. Well, that was good, man. That was good. Anything else to talk about, or should I let you go?
What was the, Brian, when was, y'all might have already talked about this, but what was the moment when you were like, with the inception of Right Now, was there a moment where you were like, you know what would make this world a better place?
Well, so the way I'd answer that, Clay, I mean, the transition we made from DVD to the streaming really was a big kind of trajectory change for us, not in terms of the content and the mission, but just the way we were distributing it. And really, I think back to, that was in that kind of 2010-11 era. My brother, who I work with, I think about him a lot because he kind of came to the table and said, hey, you know, my wife's a teacher. She's getting a lot of online training now where they do it, you know, digitally through these online resources like that. And I wonder if we would have a future, you know, in which some of our resources could make their way online. And so that conversation, among others, it just, and that was around the time that my dad very proactively had handed the baton off to me and some other younger leaders. And so we were just kind of all going, okay, we have this rich history behind us. We have this desire to continue on with the similar mission, but, you know, maybe in new ways because there's a new season. And so, I'd be lying if I said, oh, yeah, we felt like streaming was the way to go and it was going to be like this easy and you know, surefire thing. But I also tell people I was young and dumb enough probably just to be like, I think this is what we're supposed to do. And we kind of led the charge that direction and had no clue really what was going to happen with all that. And thankfully, so far, it's been great.
Can I ask one more?
Yeah, you sure can.
Brian, so what advice do you give? What do you tell younger leaders about innovation? I mean, innovation is such a, you know, everybody wants to be known as innovative, but you really did something that was innovative. Is it something that you can grow into or something you can aim toward? How do you advise others?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is super profound, but I think, again, when I think back on our season of kind of that transition, I think we were just asking a lot of questions. And so I think being willing to ask a lot of questions, even of ourselves, even harder questions of, do we have to do it this way, you know, continue to do it this way, or are there other ways that we should be considering? But for us, we kept that mission at the core. So it wasn't like, we could be doing anything, so should we sell T-shirts and water guns? I mean, it wasn't like just anything was on the table. It was like, with this mission in mind, to serve, you know, the church in this way, what's the best way to continue to get resourcing in front of that audience? And so we just, I guess the way I'd answer that, Clay, is just being willing to ask a lot of questions, you know, of yourself and have other people ask questions of you and then try to adapt from there.
That's good.
Love it. Fearlessly asking questions.
You know,
thanks for what you do. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for Right Now for sure. Matt, I don't know what made you think to call me, but thanks for...
Well, I knew you'd have some good questions, but he did share with me over lunch that Right Now Media is now in 25,000 churches, mm-hmm. as a resource for 25,000 churches,
yep.
Around the country, and then 6,000 outside the U.S. too. Yep. So, I mean, that's a significant deal, and it's pretty cool. So
the Netflix of the church world.
Yeah, I love and hate that. So we use that analogy for a long time because we'd call pastors and we'd say, hey, we got the streaming library, and they'd kind of like, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Well, kind of like Netflix. Oh, okay, I get it.
Oh, okay.
So for years we used that, and then recently we're like, I think that's doing us more harm than good. So
it's better than being the Redbox.
Well,
the
that's
church
true.
World.
Or the Blockbuster.
The Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Blockbuster
yeah.
video.
Right. Yeah.
It's a good point.
Well, Clay, right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate
day.
It.
Yeah,
thanks, Clay.
All right, see you guys. Bye.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I've got just a few other questions I kind of wanted to ask you, and it was interesting because you said that moment, or you said, man, I just hope I don't screw it up, right? Yeah. Do you have any redos? Like, do you have, if there was something that you'd want to redo or do over, mulligan?
Yeah.
You know, do you have any of those?
I think...
And it doesn't even have to be related to right now. Maybe it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think...
I mean, you can go to Texas.
Okay. I don't think that would have been my choice. You know, I think going back to the culture thing, I don't exactly know what point there would have been a redo. I just know that, and realized and learned, man, the culture of the organization does start with me. And if I'm not thinking about it and focused on it, it's not going to...
Yeah,
it's just not going to ripple out. And so, again, I would say there was a season a number of years ago where I was just like, it just that was very apparent to me, and I just realized, oh, I've kind of ignored this or just not given as much attention as I should. And so, there's not a one moment that I would redo, but there's a season where I think I think I could have done some things different and helped all of our team. You know, those that are there today and those that aren't even there today. You know, maybe have stuck with us longer.
Okay, that's good. Well, let's talk about Right Now for Work.
Yeah.
Just for a little bit. I'd love for you to just kind of introduce that to the audience.
Sure.
And then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. So, you know, we have this longer track record of serving churches with this, you know, on-demand streaming library of videos. And the whole purpose is really, again, to try to resource the church and the people of the church to be active in their faith. But we recognized about 8 or 9 years ago that a big part of the church that sometimes gets overlooked are these business people, these people going to work and trying to figure out how does their faith intersect where they go to work every day. And so we began thinking, well, there are a lot of Christians, you know, in those leadership positions, either in the position of ownership or an executive of some sort. What if we could create some content, curate some content that they would be able to then use with their teams, you know, kind of within the walls of the company? I'm not talking about like a Bible study because that's not what the leader of the company needs their people to go through. I'm talking about like, are there some team dynamic and some leadership questions or you know, leadership topics and things that would be naturally helpful for that business or that team to flourish that we could put in front of them that would be, it's faith-based, even if it's not overtly faith, you know, oriented. So that the stuff inside the walls of the company is like, yeah, I would watch that stuff with Patrick Lencioni on dysfunctional teams and help my team, you know, not be dysfunctional. But then as my team is in that library, they may also stumble upon something related to marriage or parenting or finance that we all struggle with. And so that would be a way for that Christian business leader, that Christian business owner to both help their business flourish, but also then put, hopefully, you know, meaningful resources in front of their team. So that's what Right Now Media at Work is. And we have about 3,000 businesses that subscribe to that kind of version of our library. And again, it's just curated very differently so that people of the company who log in feel like, oh, there's stuff here for me. And if they keep digging, it's stuff for me at my business, at my work, but if I dig down even deeper, there's even some stuff that I may be interested in for home.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing because, you know, I would say you could probably admit it's a touchy subject.
Absolutely.
Right? And obviously a lot of the employers that we represent, we understand it's a touchy subject, especially with the DEI initiatives and which are good initiatives. But what's interesting is that depending on who you believe Christ was, no one really disagrees that he taught really good principles, right? And so there's probably an aspect of, regardless of your faith, there's some good principles that can help lead an organization, correct?
Absolutely. Well, and that's, I mean, you know, thinking of Clay. I mean, you know, Clay's history and background is primarily as a pastor, but he's an excellent teacher, and he knows how to take the things he's learned from, you know, the Bible and just his faith sphere, and then bring it to leaders. Yeah. And it's powerful stuff, and it's he does it in a way that's very, very much like, yeah, this is good stuff for me, regardless of where it came from. And so we have a lot of that kind of resource, and that's why we've enjoyed working with Clay, because he has that potential.
Yeah. Have you seen either a resource, even if you know, the leadership is not a Christian leadership, have you seen that resource be deployed in an organization?
Yes and no. I mean, there's certainly some occasions where that's happened. I mean, you need typically some sort of champion in there that says, hey, this is good and it's Christian, and so I'll be the internal champion. It doesn't mean that everybody has to, you know, be a Christian to enjoy it or be a Christian to advocate for it, but usually there's somebody in there that feels like that's a part that they want to champion. And like you said, it's touchy. I mean, some companies are, you know, very, very overt in how they kind of their value system. And then others, it's like, well, the owner has a value system. And it's not that they're afraid to talk about it, but they just it's not just as prominently displayed yeah. throughout the company. And so we're trying to, it's hard to navigate, and there's yeah. just different types of folks out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you've brought it to the table. And and so I'd love to kind of hear a little bit about maybe some future aspirations that you might have for right now, or anything that's just kind of on the horizon that you're excited about.
Yeah. You know, no secret, I mean, you think, especially since the pandemic, I mean, the world is changing and has changed. And so there's just a lot of things that the way it, in the business world, in the church world, that maybe we used to do things that just isn't always the way that's going to be done. And so we're trying to keep our eye on what does that mean? You mentioned international earlier. We're certainly really excited about, you know, the opportunity to serve folks outside of the United States. And so we are working with teams that are creating content around the world and trying to make sure that that content is relevant to that part of, you know, the world as possible. And that's, I think, partly why we're seeing that area grow, is because there's content there that's relevant. And so we're learning a lot about what is happening around the world and what issues and needs are relevant there. Here in the States, I think as far as churches go, there's, I think, a growing number of kind of this, what you call like a house church, you know, idea of it doesn't have to be a you know, tens of thousands of square foot building and a staff of eight people. I mean, they're saying, no, we can meet with 20 or 25 people in our home, and it's a more organic, smaller, simpler approach. And you see more and more of those. And so we're asking, well, how do we as an organization serve that kind of group? In some ways, it's very similar to that kind of traditional church, but there's a lot of differences. And so we're at the very beginning stages of learning what that could look like. And I think that is just a reflection for us anyways of there's just a lot of parts and pockets of the church that we have not, as an organization, historically served as much because we didn't have maybe resources or capacity to. And now that we do, we're going, okay, how do we serve some of these different parts of the church? Yeah. And make sure, again, there's content relevant for them and that we're very keyed in on their specific and unique needs. So. Yeah. We're even though there's a lot of unknowns, I think, about the future of maybe the church and how people perceive the church in our country, we're very excited about the opportunity to serve where it's going.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I want to backtrack for a second just because you had talked about the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like, especially as I'm sitting across a leader like yourself, I'd love to hear about, man, can you remember back like March of 2020?
So crazy.
And just how it probably flipped things. I don't know if it flipped it upside down or right side up.
Yeah.
But I'd love to just kind of hear you talk about your experience and maybe even picking your head off your pillow and watching the news and seeing what happened. So.
Yeah. So it was actually not too long ago. One of the leaders on our team sent out in our little team's message group a picture that we had taken that March of 2020, and it was the last executive leadership team meeting we had before we were going remote. And so we I don't know what made us think to kind of memorialize that, but we were like, hey, something's about to happen. We don't fully know what the next, you know, week or month or year or whatever's gonna look like. So we had somebody come in and snap a picture of the eight of us just kind of finishing up this meeting. And so she sent that out and was like, oh yeah, that seems like an eternity ago. But that was the threshold of, like a lot of people, going home for a long time and having our team work remote, which was not a real common practice in our environment. Mm-hmm. And so that was a learning curve. And when I look back at the overall just kind of pandemic season, 2020 and 2021 turned out to be for us surprisingly good years. I mean, the team really did thrive in that remote environment, as well as businesses and churches were looking for more digital resources because they weren't gathering in person as much. Mm-hmm. And so I think it kind of sent a swell of folks coming toward us saying, hey, I think you may have something that could be helpful for our organization. What is that? And so we actually saw things were just busy. And I think that was great because it kept our team, even though they were remote and distant from each other, even more dialed into that mission and like, hey, I have a purpose in this unique season. Like, we are really serving and meeting a need. I would say 2022 and 2023, unexpectedly for us, just have been slower, and we're slower because I think we kind of looked at 2020 and 2021 like, oh man, things are just rocking beyond what we thought, and we didn't know when and if that would end. And 2022 and 2023, we realized, oh, okay, that's going to end. And so it just, all of a sudden, things slowed way down for our growth. I mean, still creating a lot of resources and growing in other areas, but just it was not quite the same. We brought back probably 90% of our team I'm trying to remember now, I guess that would have been somewhere in 2022.
Yeah.
And just said, hey, this is, we've enjoyed the culture when we're together. We're going to bring folks back. And I know there was some resistance for some people on it. I think others were like, I'm hungry to get back because they really did value and crave, you know, that kind of being around each other. There were some things we tried to do during the pandemic to keep some of that team culture, like, going as best you could. Hard to do when it's mostly remote. And then since then, we've just had some great, honestly, kind of parties and gatherings and things where it's just, it's like, oh yeah, it's fun to be together. And that's what's fun, is to see people just enjoying being together.
Yeah. Well, there is not, I haven't heard of one organization where it wasn't, where it was an easy process to bring employees back.
Yeah.
You know, and well, I thank you for your leadership, the example that you are. I think you're being an example to many, just like your dad was an example to many. And I hope that that sinks in, you know, right? Like that's a, I mean, we're trying to do it, right? And I just award you for the job that you have done.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me and just kind of sharing these nuggets of wisdom. I know there's a lot of people that will appreciate it.
Yeah.
And any kind of last words that you kind of like to share for the audience?
Well, I would just reciprocate and say, I think what you're doing and what you're generally focused on here in terms of just thinking about, you know, the excellence culture, that just, it matters. And again, I don't know if I would have always said that, but I've realized and recognized that it does. And we've worked really hard to try to make that a part of our team's culture. And I know people will stick, you know, with you when they feel like, hey, like you said, I belong, this place matters, I've got a mission that matters, and my skills are being used. People just want to be, hey, what I'm doing, you know, the strengths I have are being used. And so you can do that as a culture and celebrate them or find somebody to help you celebrate them. Like that's a good thing. And so I commend you for the culture focus because it's absolutely critical.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And welcome to the excellence culture.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.